All right, let's see. There we go. It actually worked. Buttons are working. Happy days. Good morning. Good afternoon, actually. I just woke up from like a two-hour nap, and the housekeepers are here, so I've got some vacuuming noises going on in the background. Happy Monday. I think today's Monday. Yeah, today's Monday. Hello, SQL Dev DBA. Hello, Surly Dev, too, as well. Good to see y'all. It's late over in the UK. SQL Dev DBA says, napping in this economy. Yeah, I'm a huge nap fan. I'm usually up around 2 or 3 in the morning every morning, and then I work until around noon, and then I go off and take a nap, and then the second part of my day starts. I can pretty easily nap for about 45 minutes to an hour and just wake up, no alarm or whatever, and I just get up and I'm totally fresh and fulfilled. And then usually in the second half of the day, my goof-off part of the day switches in. Like for the longest time, I would, after like 1 p.m. or whatever, when I woke back up, I would have lunch with Eve, I would take the dog for a walk, I would go play Dead by Daylight. I had a sprint of a bunch of work and vacation stuff for like the last 3-4 months, and I have not gamed at all. I gamed like one or two games in the last 3 or 4 months, and that was it. And I totally have to, I say I have to get back on that kick, but you know, I also feel guilty because there's a bunch of stuff I have to do. The SQL Bits conference is coming up. SQL Bits conference is about 3 months from now, and I have an all-new training class that I'm debuting there, Dev Prod Demon Hunters, where it's a spoof on the theme of K-pop Demon Hunters, where I'm working on finding the performance differences between production and development environments, and I'm working on a script that's going to make that easier as well. So I got a ton of work to do for that to prepare. So now afternoons, I'll be working on that instead of going off and doing Dead by Daylight. Surly Dev, no. Surly Dev says, since your last stream, I got made redundant, and then I also gained a SQL developer role. Woohoo! Okay, that's good to hear. I have heard from a lot of readers and friends who've been made redundant over the last couple of months. There's been so much churn in the job market with companies using AI as like an excuse to lay people off. And I think it's all kind of cyclical. I was just talking with Richie about this today. I think in the next 10 years, we're going to have so much tech work trying to overcome all of the apps that are vibe coded right now. Right now, vibe coding is letting middle managers and business users create applications really quickly and really easily. Some of those applications will get very popular. You're going to be popular. Be popular. And so some are going to become really popular, and they're going to become enterprise grade, you know, being used by companies with thousands of employees. And we're going to have all this work to go clean them up, get the data right, make them performant and all that. It's exactly like how it was with the proliferation of Excel and then the proliferation of Access databases as well, where those things eventually have to be moved, upsized, and made more secure and all that. But I think there's this temporary lull of everybody's like, party in the database and everybody's invited. We can build anything we want. And then we're going to pay for that over the next decade or so. And there'll be more work than we ever did before. All right, let's take a look and go see what we've got for the top voted question. The top voted question from PollGab comes from DBA in Action, who says, hi, Brent, have you actually come across anyone using SQL Server availability groups in containers? No, I have not. I have seen vendors like try to push that solution, but I have not seen anyone do it in production. That doesn't mean that no one's doing it, but it's pretty doggone rare at this point. Next up, speaking of layoffs, new developer says, after 30 years of, as a production DBA support, I got laid off, but I got moved into a development DBA position. I know SQL batch scripting, and I can usually tell what a PowerShell script is doing, but I'm not a developer, at least not yet. Any advice on how to proceed? Get Itzik Bengan's books. Itzik Bengan has a phenomenal series of books. I say series, there's really, you could get one and you're going to be doing really well for a long period of time. Itzik Ben Gon's books, T-SQL Fundamentals and T-SQL Querying, they're really targeted at database developers, people who do database development full-time. And it sounds like it's going to be easy. It sounds like it's straightforward, like, oh, here's how to write a query. It is so much harder than that. It is so much more ambitious than that. Teaches you much more about how to write long-term sustainable code, how to write performant code. It's really a whole journey. And then in terms of other like general advice that I would give a database developer, you probably didn't have to learn GitHub before. You're going to want to learn GitHub now. And you're going to ask, is there some kind of tool that will magically integrate our databases with source control? And I have not seen a good one yet. Because when you come from a production DBA role, your thought is there must be some kind of tool that like watches the database and anytime a change is made, automatically checks it into source control. And that is not how those tools work. What you're supposed to be doing in development is you're supposed to, when you want to change something, you're supposed to check your change into source control. And then from there, you take a consolidated view out of source control and push that out to your production servers. That's just not going to be how you're used to working as a production DBA. Oh, thanks. I'm a fake. That's cool. I'm a fake subscribed with Prime. So as a reminder, for those of you who have Amazon Prime, you can get one free Twitch subscription if you tie in your Amazon Prime account with your Twitch account. And then that way you don't have to see ads whenever ads would show up normally on a stream, which is cool. Let's see here. Oh, PandaWord says, I love the concept of DevProd Demon Hunters. I actually got that from ChatGPT. I said, here's the session I want to write, and I described DevProd. Oh, Surly Dev, thank you. I described the session that I wanted to write, and I said, SQL Bits' theme is cartoons this year. Can you give me some ideas of cartoons that I could integrate with a session where I'm trying to figure out the differences between production and development performance? Things like column level statistics being different between the two, database distribution being different between the two, trace flags, database scoped configurations, things like that. And popped out a list of cartoons and animes, and there were a couple that I almost did. Mario Kart was one that I almost picked because I was trying to figure out how to make the theme work, and I just couldn't make it work. But I love Mario Kart, and the idea of like slinging bananas against our foes, but I just couldn't make that work. But as soon as I read DevProd or K-pop Demon Hunters, I was like, yes. And it has to be DevProd Demon Hunters, and that'll be so perfect. I almost did DevProd Difference Hunters, but I don't think that worked as well. Surly Dev says, most of my DBA experience has been themed after Scooby-Doo and the Wacky Races. Scooby-Doo, especially with pulling the sheet off the... Ah, the villain is just parameter sniffing, you know, or whatever the villain's going to be. That's always fun. Next up, Little Bobby Table's mother says, even with DBCC drop clean buffers and free proc cache, I still can't reproduce the slow first execution of a stored procedure each day. Is there another cache that can be cleared? I bet what you're facing is stats updates. I bet that's what you're facing. So here's the thing, SQL Server has this automatic stats updates that kicks in whenever a certain percentage, and the percentage varies depending on your version and your trace flags and stuff. Oh, thank you, Leppy R64. When you hit a certain amount of change, SQL Server, when you go to run your query, SQL Server is going to detect that that percentage of the data has changed, and SQL Server is going to say, time out, I need to go scan these tables or sample these tables in order to see what changed before I go build a new execution plan. You can see this. I'm going to give you the fastest way across the finish line. Fastest way across the finish line is right click on the database involved, go into properties. There's going to be a setting called async stats updates. It's like allow asynchronous stats updates or something like that. Turn that on. So then when you turn that on, what's going to happen? The first time a query runs in the morning, instead of it waiting for the new stats to be gathered before a query plan can be built, SQL Server is going to take the older query plan, assuming it's still in memory, and then go run with that while it kicks off a stats update in the background, then recompiles the plan the next time that it's run. The other thing that it could be is overnight, you may be running things like free proc cache, or you may be having plan cache churn, where SQL Server has to build a new execution plan the first time that the query runs. I don't think it's that, because for most queries, the runtime isn't that dramatically affected by building that new plan, but hitting stats updates will be. So that's the place where I'd start. Turn on allow automatic stats update or asynchronous stats updates. It's not on by default. And if that solves your problem, there you go. Let's see here. Blom says, do you ever just consider quitting SQL and doing something completely different, or just retiring? Yeah, during the pandemic, I thought a lot about this. So Erica, my ex-wife, and I were in Iceland when the pandemic hit, and the State Department was like issuing all these warnings, and every March 2020, everybody's got to come back to the United States. And I remember reading the news and, you know, being in the middle of nowhere in the winter and just having a glorious time, but reading the news and thinking, okay, I'm going to be broke for like 6 months. And I had enough cash where I could sustain that, and it wasn't going to bother me, but I was like, I'm not going to have any incoming business for the next 6 months. Because I saw right away that it was going to change the world, and we were going to be working from home, and it was going to disrupt all kinds of things, and nobody was going to be productive. And so I said, what am I going to do for 6 months? I was so burned out on Microsoft SQL Server at that point that I was like, what else could I go do and learn? And I narrowed it down to a couple of different things. One of them actually was Visual Studio, where I was like, I was a developer a long time ago in another galaxy. And I was like, maybe I should go back and learn Visual Studio now, just enough that I could talk to developers about Entity Framework and build demo apps and show, here's how you do it right, here's how you do it wrong in terms of the database. And I didn't end up learning that, but there was a point where I thought I was going to go down that road. Then instead, what I ended up doing was I was like, I'm going to retire. The pandemic was really good in terms of training income, because all of a sudden everybody had to learn from home. So there was a point where I bought a condo in Mexico, a beachfront condo in Mexico, and basically retired. I told my friends I was slowing down. I was going to quit work, not take any more incoming new clients. And within like 3-4 months, I realized I was bored out of my gourd. I was bored. I couldn't get friends or family to come down and visit because it was still during the pandemic. It was like 2021, 2022. I couldn't get friends to travel internationally and come down to visit me in Mexico. I couldn't have nice cars down there. Like Cabo San Lucas is terrible on cars, really rough roads and whatnot. So I was like, okay, screw it. I'm just going to have to come back to the United States and go back to work. So I came back and moved back to San Diego, then Vegas. I don't think I'm ever going to retire as long as I'm physically able to get up in front of people and share the stuff that I love to do. Because technology is so amazing right now. Oh my God, there's so many things that I would love to learn and share. Like, I'm having a great time with AI. It doesn't make sense to teach courses on that right now, but there are so many things that I love playing around with and learning that, and y'all seem to like watching and showing up, so there we have it. A SQL Dev DBA says, Brent flips cars would have been a fun channel. I actually thought about it, because I do roll through cars pretty quickly. I did think about starting a YouTube channel, but I thought as soon as I did that, then it becomes a job and I have to like work on it. And then I have to cycle through cars even when I don't want to buy cars. Like, I haven't bought a car in a little while because I'm pretty happy with where the stable is right now, the mix that I have. But I would have to continue to roll through them if I was going to do a YouTube channel, which kind of takes some of the fun out of it. Let's see. Next up, Depender asks, should we be running CheckDB on log shipping secondaries? Have you ever seen database corruption travel from primaries to secondaries? Okay, so you're asking a couple of different things there. One, should you run CheckDB on those other servers? Here's the way you remember it. Any server that you would fail over to, you want to run CheckDB on that server. Any server you would fail over to, you want to run CheckDB there. And of course, you want to run it before you fail over to it, right? Because it can have Windows problems, SQL Server problems, driver problems, hardware problems, storage problems. And all these things can cause database corruption. Your primary could be totally fine, but your secondary could be a hot mess. And absolutely, yes, I have seen people, myself included, try to fail over to a server only to find that its underlying storage system was hot garbage. So yes, run CheckDB anywhere you would want to fail over to. You should be running CheckDB there. Let's see here. Corporate DBA says, to move sysadmins logins to the least privilege, I tried SQL audit, but log growth is unmanageable. How do you identify the working set of permissions for a legacy user? I do not. I don't do any SQL work whatsoever. I'm sorry. Not SQL work, sorry. Security work. I don't do any security work whatsoever. This is a great example of something that I would either post on Reddit or on SQLServerCentral.com. Reddit has a really active subreddit for SQL Server that's just called SQL Server, so try there. My Tea Got Cold asks, do you have any good resources for Resource Governor? At the risk of sounding like a jerk, I think it's pretty straightforward. I think the documentation is pretty clear. You set up workload groups, you set up workload pools, you put people into those groups by using a classifier function. Those three things are covered in books online and you're done. It's fairly straightforward. I don't know of any hidden gotchas that you might encounter with Resource Governor. So what I would say is I would start with the documentation. So the documentation has a bad rep. Documentation has a bad reputation because decades ago, it sucked. Decades ago, it would be like, Resource Governor helps you govern resources. But for the last like 10 years, Microsoft has consistently shipped better documentation. And I'm not saying that because I have friends who work on the documentation program inside Microsoft. I got friends who work at all kinds of things in Microsoft, and I'll be the first person to tell you that a lot of it sucks. But the documentation team is actually doing a really good job. So I would go through that, and I think it's fairly self-explanatory from there. I don't think you're going to hit anything that isn't covered in the documentation. And it's not long either. The Resource Governor set is maybe 20 pages long. It's pretty short and compact when covering those things. Let's see here. The one that failed the interview asks, interview question, how do I estimate resources for a new SQL project? Do I answer answers like extrapolating from the previous system didn't make estimate interviewers happy? Is there some scientific method? So it sounds like what they're wanting more there. If somebody asked me how do I estimate resources, I'd be honest. I'd say it sounds like you're looking for a project manager rather than a worker. I generally wouldn't have someone who's doing technical work estimate resources for an entire project. Let me give you an example. So I have a full-time developer, Richie Rump, on my team. He's like Joris on Blue Sky and some other places. And when Richie and I sit down to sketch out a project, something that we want to accomplish, I always tell Rich, and we don't do this a lot. We don't do green, you know, field work a whole lot. But when we do it, I tell him, I don't need estimates. I don't want to know how long you think it's going to take. Let's just start doing the work, you know, and sketch out what needs to be involved. Because I don't think that us tech workers are any good at giving accurate resources or resource estimates, myself included. If somebody told me how long does it take to design a new database, I'd say, well, what do you know about the database? Have you got any documentation on what it is that I'm going to be designing? Have you got any documentation on the business resources, on what the business rules are for that data? I'm like, no, you need to figure that out. Okay, so I don't even know what I don't know. I have no way of estimating anything like that. So I would say if that was important to the interviewers, that you were a good resource estimator, you probably dodged a bullet because it probably wasn't the job you wanted. That's probably something more like a project manager. And go over to that again. Okay. Now, so I'm shooting this through a Sony camera. It's like a $4,000 camera. I forget the model number, and I should tell it to you so you never buy this piece of junk. What is this model number? Can't tell you, but it's a really good, expensive Sony camera. But it turns out that if you try to run 4K 60 frames a second through it for more than like 15 minutes at a time, it overheats and shuts down. So you got to have a third party Peltier cooler on the back of it, powered by USB-C in order to get the video. So bananas. All right, let's see here. Brown Log Pinball says, Brent, sign up for my class, How to Stream.
Okay.
That was sarcasm. Let's see here. What else next? Oh, Marcus. Marcus the German asks, Hi, Brent. You mentioned that you paint your green screen. Is this a special paint for green screen or just green? You can buy a special paint for green screen. The problem is you have to apply it in a very special way. It requires special brushes, and the texture on it is exactly like velvet. If you look at it afterwards, you can see that there's like a 3D texture in the paint, and you can run your hand over it, and when you run your hand over it, you ruin it. You actually have to paint it and then make sure no one touches the wall. Now, as a result of that, if you use it, it's amazing. It absorbs light like you would never believe. It makes green screen work so easy, but I only did that once and I regretted it. Because like I would have my cleaning lady would lean up against the wall while she was vacuuming or something, or brush her arm against it, or I would trip and hit my hand on it and it would ruin that section of the wall. And you could see every touch that had been made to it. So I don't recommend the real professional green screen paint. Just use green paint and that's the end of it. Get the most vibrant green paint that you can get. And if you Google for like green paint codes, green screen paint codes, there are people who will give you like Sherwin Williams or Behr paint codes that give you that nice bright green. Sequel Dev DBA says, oh my God, the temptation. It's even worse when you see these paints in person because they absorb light so beautifully and they look like a velvet kind of thing that you want to touch it so bad. It's such a beautiful look to it. That's utterly gorgeous. Let's see here. Andrew asks, we're on hyperscale planning to move from US West to US West 2 so that we can use availability zones. Is there documentation around using fog to move the primary? But I can't find anything about moving HA or named replicas. Are you aware of any gotchas? So the problem is you're using, if you think about the cloud, the percentage, think of it as like a pie chart. The percentage of people, the pie chart, who are using Microsoft databases that are using Azure Hyperscale, all of a sudden it's a really tiny portion of that pie chart. Now, what about the portion of those who are moving from one region to another in order to get to availability zones? Now, what about the percentage of those who need to worry about moving HA or named replicas? It's probably like just you. So you probably want to contact Microsoft support to see if anyone else has done it and experienced that kind of thing, because you may be literally the first client that does that. Let's see here. We'll do one. Oh, we'll do another one. Rafra says, any chance to see you at FabCon this year? No, I just ran out of time trying to submit sessions. I had a whole bunch of stuff going on in my life when the call for speakers came out, and I could not get sessions written in time. And it didn't quite rise up to the priority of other things that I had going on at the time. Everything's cool at the house. I just had a whole lot of stuff going on. And because it's a relatively new conference, it wasn't like super high priority on my list. Because I've seen pictures of it from the last year, and I was like, I don't think there's a lot of people there. And maybe it'll get bigger this year, who knows? And I wish them nothing but success, but I got to pick and choose my battles. From the pictures, it looked about the same size as a small regional SQL Saturday. Surly Dev says, maybe some green curtains glued flat to the wall. They make, Elgato makes, and a couple of other companies make, like projector screen type things that are green, that are used for that exact thing. And you can either hang them from your ceiling, or they make them where you can pull them up from the floor. So a friend of mine does that because he's got a really big office. He's a professional live streamer and does like video game stuff. Has a really large office, and he just doesn't have a wall right behind his desk. So whenever he wants to stream, he just pulls up the green screen from the floor, and it clips onto a tripod kind of thing. It's really slick. It makes sense. Let's see here. Anything else I want to hit today? Marion asks, have you ever thought of taking on some young apprentice and training him or her in the Jedi arts so that they can carry on your outstanding community work? You mean like my training classes? You mean like the thousands of people every year who attend my training classes? Yeah. Yeah, they... You know, you could join, Marion. You could learn from me. You just go to BrentOzar.com, and up at the top, there's a training button. You don't have to apply. Well, I guess there's an application question. The application question is, what is your credit card number? But you can start now. Let's see here. Anything else? Oh, wow. Felipe, so I'm going down and picking some of the other questions that I find really interesting that aren't necessarily the most highest voted, but stuff that I kind of want to talk about. So Philippe asks, why does it seem harder for DBAs to work for companies outside their own countries? It's very common for developers to do it, but why is it so rare for DBAs to do it? Typically, it's because DBAs are kind of at the center of the company. DBAs have to interact with the developers and the project managers and the end users and the reporting team and the sysadmins, because they need to establish uptime, things like that. So because they interface with everybody in the company, companies usually want them in time zones and kind of legal accountable areas where they can be accountable to everyone. The other thing that you have to remember is whenever you work remotely, if you want to go work remotely for another company, you are now in competition with everyone else in the world, not just your country. So when a company wants to hire a remote DBA, they simply go to the cheapest country that they possibly can that has a whole lot of database administrators. That country is India. There are companies in India that specialize in remote database administration, and they have dozens or hundreds of remote database administrators available at relatively inexpensive prices. Plus, when companies are offshoring their developers, they tend to get DBAs from the same company. They just go, give me 10 developers and a database administrator for this project. And so that they tend to just do it all in one package. So there you go. I'll even say too, it is fairly rare that I get clients in other country time zones. So like I get clients from Canada from time to time and Central America from time to time. It's extremely rare that I get clients in Europe because people usually want folks who want work in the same time zone. And there are qualified database administrators in Europe too as well. There are qualified database administrators in Europe, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, you know, and all kinds of different time zones. So it's just more convenient for them to go there. Let's see here. Oh, Andrew asks another question. With the current job atmosphere, is junior DBA or entry DBA dead? It seems like I'm hoping for a database analyst job is the way to go and hope for DBA experience. It has always been true that the junior DBA market is almost non-existent. This has always been true, going back to when I started. No one hires junior DBAs. What they do is they take someone on staff that they already know well, somebody that they trust, somebody that has a good rapport with the DBA team and the sysadmins. They take someone on staff and they gradually segue them into a junior DBA role. Because if you think about it, usually junior means you have no real experience. You're starting, you've got maybe worked as a developer for a while or a sysadmin for a while. But you don't go from one junior DBA job to your next junior DBA job. After you've been working as a junior DBA for months or years, your next step would be DBA or senior DBA. But you can't be a junior for forever, right? You got to grow out of those toddler pants. So when someone is looking for a junior DBA, they wouldn't go hire someone who is an existing junior DBA. They would hire someone who's a developer, a sysadmin, who wants to segue, or an analyst, like you say, who wants to segue into the database administration role. And at that point, why would they look outside the company? Because they have a lot of developers and sysadmins already. SQL Dev DBA says, my friend says support desk and sysadmin and data analyst roles are the most likely to grow into junior DBA. Yeah, exactly. That or developers as well. Surly Dev says, or they choose the person closest to the server when the DBA quits. And is it advice to people out there who are senior DBAs or just quote unquote regular DBAs? I always tell people you should always be looking for your next assistant. You should always have one person in your company that you're like, this person's going to be the next DBA. They are going to take my job when I leave. I'm going to train them myself. I'm going to go talk to them and say, hey, do you want to do what I do full time? I'm going to teach you everything that I know. We're going to do it gradually. When I'm gone on vacation, I want you to be the person who's on call, who will support the stuff that I was doing. So that way, I love anytime I'm going to make a change to systems, then I copy them on it, go, hey, check this out. Here's what I'm thinking about doing. Here's why I'm doing it. Because that way you're getting to self-select the person. And if the company decides to hire a junior DBA, you got to pick them because you can say at that point, well, I've already got Alice over here from accounting ready to go. She was a really good analyst. I really enjoy working with her. I've been training her on the side because she shows initiative. And then you get to pick your coworker. You get to pick the person that you're working with. So I find that really fulfilling. All right, we've been going for like half an hour now, longer than normal, but it's so easy when I'm in here in my home office, although I am kind of suspicious because I don't hear the housekeeper's like vacuums or whatever running, so I should probably go check on that. Hopefully y'all had fun and learned something, and I will see y'all on the next Office Hours. Adios.